I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello dear listener, this is David Turner. Thank you so much for downloading Random Access Memories, a retro gaming podcast. I just want to thank all of our wonderful patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show. It really makes a difference. Thank you. Producers Harsh Singh, Sam Hughes, Craig Hannan and Martin Warren. Executive producers Mark Gidley, Tim Nichols and Andy Goss. If you want to support the show, if you'd like to get the show ad-free and get it before anyone else, then please head over to patreon.com/IanLee. That's patreon.com/IanLee. Enjoy the show.
Strange maths.
I didn't even realise I did that. Right, let's do this.
Just do this
thing.
Let's do this.
Let's do it. It's Ian Lee. There he is, right, TV presenter, radio personality, thief.
What do you mean by thief?
The strawberries.
The strawberries, yeah, I do.
I've got 14 questions about the strawberries for you today. Hello, Ian. Thank you so much for coming on Random Access Memories. This is really exciting.
Thank you for asking me. I've been listening to this. I've really enjoyed this podcast. I've listened to a few of them, and I'm thrilled to be on, so thank you.
Brilliant. I mean, you've got a lot. I mean, episode 3 was the one. You've got a lot to live up to. Before we get to your game, you have bought a game with you.
I have got a game, yes. And it's I was so thrilled to rediscover this game. So, yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Well, I'll be thrilled to discover it because I've never heard of it before. But we'll get to that.
Okay.
I was interested because I've listened to thousands of hours of you talking.
Okay.
I've got to admit, massive, big
I'm time. Assuming you mean my radio shows and not just bugging my house and stuff.
Oh yeah, I just hacked into your Alexa. your radio shows and your podcasts.
Thank you.
And I've always wondered why retro gaming? Why is that side of gaming the most interesting to you?
It is because I think there's some kind of arrested development there. There was something very special for me growing up with those old computers, the old Dragon 32. I remember seeing someone ZX81 and just thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. And yeah. I think there is some reluctance to grow up. I had a big gap in my gaming history, went from kind of BBC and Commodore and Spectrum. And then I stopped with a little dabbling with the Master System, but I stopped. And then I got back in when I saw a Sega Saturn. I was at a friend's house. They had a black box on there under their telly. I said, what's that black box? I'm thinking it might be like Sky or something. And they went, oh, it's a Sega Saturn. Do you want to have a go? And they put Wipeout on. And it was like going from, a school days on the ZX Spectrum to Wipeout. It blew my mind. But why retro? It's been reignited. Last year I went to Liverpool and in a junk shop, they had a Dragon 32 computer that was the first computer I ever had. And I just was kept salivating at it. And I didn't buy it, but I went home and I kept looking at them on eBay. And I kept, and of course, I ended up buying one. And then yeah. I just started watching loads of YouTube channels of predominantly middle-aged stroke old men fixing Amigas and fixing Ataris and fixing Spectrums. And I just found it. I found it very calming, very relaxing.
And did it take you back when you're looking into consoles like that? Does it take you back to being a kid when you originally had them, or do you appreciate them from the perspective of you getting this thing now?
That's a great question. It's somewhere between the two. I buy this stuff and I don't use it. That's the thing. I buy all of this stuff and it piles up. I've recently bought an Xbox 360 and under here I've got a Dreamcast and a GameCube, and in there I've got a Dragon and I've got a BBC. But I like researching it. The pleasure for me now is researching it, looking at prices, looking at mods and getting it. And the BBC is set up in my kitchen with an old CRT monitor and it's modded. So it's got every game on it. And it looks beautiful. So I can enjoy its beauty. But I think, yeah, it does take me back. I remember, I remember being 10 with a BBC Micro, maybe a little bit older. And my friends, Orlando and Christopher Kelly, they were liars, basically. They were terrible. They were lovely human beings and they were liars. And they told me that their BBC had somehow connected to what we used to be called Prestel, right? Which was a very, very old fashioned internet before we had the word internet. That their BBC, that a clock had appeared and it was telling the time, and they were able to exchange messages with other computers. Now they weren't connected to anything. This was just in their living room. Right. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So that night I set up my BBC. And I had to kind of do it in the hall because oh my God. Then I put the telephone, it had to be in the hall because we didn't have those long leads. And I put the telephone on top of the computer and I started typing, hello?
Wait. That's amazing.
Clock, because I was trying to get this clock up. They meant clock. Is there anyone there? Then I thought, right, okay, well, I need to take the phone off the hook. So I take the phone off the hook, and if I put that on the speaker in the corner, hello? Yeah, and I was there for about 45 minutes.
What if it works, though? What if it worked?
Screw you, Berners-Lee. Could have been Ian Lee that discovered it. But back in the day, we didn't know what computers were. We didn't know what they could do. So Christopher and Orlando tell me this. They were a God-fearing family. Well, this must be true. I'll go and do it. And I went into school the next day. I couldn't get it to work. Couldn't get it to work. Oh, maybe you're doing it wrong. Never mind.
I miss that. I really do miss the lack of communication between school was a big part of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But also the lies. People used to just make stuff up.
Yeah,
and you would believe it. Oh, if you go to this area in this game, then you can. I remember, if you remember GoldenEye, getting the sniper rifle out on the first level, the dam level, and seeing that island out into the distance and thinking, what is there? And there was no way of knowing, because back then, it was, there might be an article about it in a magazine, but no one would be able to actually get there. Yeah. But there'd be one kid at school, so I went there last night, I got there, I did this. And I went into that. What was there? Oh, there were guns, WebDad, like the best guns in there, basically. And you go,
they had the best guns.
I need to try that. And you would go home and you would try for hours. And then you come in the next day and go, did you do it? No, I didn't do it. And then you realize, like later on, people, managed to break the game and go and see what was in there. There's nothing in there.
Right.
And you just think,
didn't have the best weapons.
Boy, it didn't have the best weapons, did it? It was so annoying. But I do miss that sort of exchange of information, like in that very specific setting.
I had another one on the. There was only one other kid I knew who had a Dragon. His name was James. I won't need to say his last name just in case he's a killer and wants to come and find me. But he had a Dragon, and he said, "Oh, I've got Knight Rider on the Dragon." What the TV show? Yeah. I'll bring it in tomorrow. It was 3 months of me going, "Did you bring it in?" Oh no, I forgot. 3 months. I only found, about 10 years ago, I remembered this and went, was there ever a Knight Rider? And I Googled, there was never a Knight Rider for the Dragon 32. He'd invented this carrot and had spent 3 months dangling a fake carrot in front of me. And I'm like, yeah, give it to me, give it to me. But yeah, the lies that were told. And you didn't know. We didn't really have the magazines then either. Certainly not when I was that age. This is like 1982. So we didn't have the game. Right.
Yeah. So did you spend any time in arcades when they started cropping up? Do you have the same love for retro arcade games as you do with home computers?
We lived in Slough, so we were completely landlocked. So the only real time we got arcades was when we went to the seaside or when Rose's Fair came along every year.
Rose's Fair?
It was a fairground, I guess, owned by the Rose family. I'm not totally sure. Here's another thing. They used to have, talk about myths. They had dive bombers, which are these two sort of like pointy aeroplanes on a spinning wheel. So you would kind of go straight down, then you'd spin up and you'd go straight down.
Yeah, I know those. Yeah, yeah.
A baby died on that.
No,
of course not. But every year,
why would they let a baby on it?
What exactly. Every year, someone would go, a baby died on that. Why was the baby riding it?
Again, it's these lies. And I love
Can I just
them.
Clarify, really though? A baby did not die on it, and I'm not making joke of it. It was one of those lies that kept.
Yeah, a baby died on that. We had the Mad Axe Man that lived down on the bridge over the allotments. That was it. And if you go up to his garage and you bang on the door, he will come out and run after you. And you would go to the garage. Everyone would go and stare at this garage door. I feel sorry for the person that lived there.
Yeah.
Because every day they'd have school kids looking at this garage door.
Oh, there was someone there.
Each other towards it. No, they were never there.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. I never. None of us had the balls to actually knock on that door. But it was, and it was just some bloke's house or someone's house, and they're looking out. And just, why are the kids out by my garage door again?
Or he's there sharpening his knife.
It could have been.
Yeah,
he could have been. Yeah. We will never know. But so, what was your favourite arcade game at Rose's Fair then?
There were Donkey Kong. I've always been a big fan of Donkey Kong. But my favourite one, I can't remember what it's called. I think it was called Drive, or something. And it was black and white. Had two steering wheels, and it was like a sort of. It was a top-down picture of like a sort of racetrack, like a Grand Prix
right,
racetrack.
I know, yeah.
And you had these. There were four tiny, tiny little cars, and there were oil slicks, and it was the hardest thing. Well, I can't remember what it was called. It was black and white, and it was the hardest thing to steer in the world. And it is the only time I can remember playing video games with my dad. The only time is really? we'd have a go on that. We'd see that and we'd go and stand. And I think it had a pedal on the floor, which at the time was like the equivalent of VR now. It's like, oh my God, it's got a pedal on the floor. It's like real driving. So that was the game. The first game I got addicted to was we were in holiday in Spain when it was still a thing to go abroad. I must have been, probably about eight, so that would have been about 1981. And now I don't really remember much about it. I remember there was this weird, like little, so it was like a bar and it had a really crappy wooden door, white wooden door. And they had a game called Popeye in there where you right. had to, yeah, basically you're Popeye and you had to go and collect all these hearts and hit Brutus or Bluto, depending where you're from. And I remember going there on my own when I was like eight. Imagine letting an eight-year-old boy go into a weird Spanish bar on his own. And then I remember going back to my mum and dad at the beach or the hotel or wherever and saying, come on, can I get some more pesetas? I want to get some more pesetas, please. Yeah. So that was the first thing I was really, really addicted to.
I had the same thing. Whenever we went on a family holiday, if we went to Spain or somewhere, my parents would spend so much time in the local bars and just give me a handful of change. And I would sit and play. It was either Bubble Bobble or Metal Slug when I was a little bit older, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember you first gravitate towards the games that you can get the most time out of per coin.
Yeah.
Because the ones that you play, you put the coin in and you're done. You're like, no, it's just a waste, isn't it? But I remember... Metal Slug, you could play for a good half an hour. One coin.
I never played. I mean, the biggest waste of money was Dragon's Lair, which some people call Dragon's Slayer. They call it Slayer. That was the one that was like a cartoon on Laserdisc, and it was a quid, 50p. Amazing. Well, it looks amazing, but it's unplayable. And you'd yeah. you would just keep pumping that. It must have been 50p. I think it was before pound coins. Anyway, someone will correct me, as the internet loves to do. But you'd pump that money in, and I don't think I've got past the second screen. It was unplayable.
Yeah, it was really hard to tell which way you were when you were supposed to press left or right, which way you're supposed to press. But that's a trick, because that does lead me to my next question. Like, what's your favourite way of controlling a game? Because there are many ways of controlling a game. You've got the Wiimote. You've got a classic controller.
Yeah.
You've got the power glove. Remember that?
Yeah, I've never used a power glove, but I've heard legend of it, yes.
Mouse and keyboard? I don't know anyone.
No. Really, no, my kids have started doing that, and they have the keyboard at a jaunty angle, and I don't get it. I don't approve.
Is it a wireless keyboard or a wired one?
Maybe? Oh, it's wired because of the lag. You can't have wireless.
Great big scissors. Get some comedy-sized scissors and just cut the cord. And then pass them an Xbox controller.
I can tell you my favourite control system.
Yes, please.
It's on a computer, and it's very specific to the BBC Micro. ZX, left and right. And I need to look at my keyboard here on this computer. ZX, left and right. And then I don't quite know what it would be... Well, on here, it's apostrophe and slash, forward slash. Right. I got a feeling on the BBC it was colon and full stop. So ZX were always, a long time ago, I was thinking of doing a gaming podcast, and I nearly called it ZX left and right, because that is the mantra for me. So that's my favorite.
I'm sure a friend gave you a much better title.
Someone did. And the space bar is jump or fire, of course. That's my favorite control system.
So that was actually on the system itself, right? That wasn't. Did you have to attach it to anything? What was the?
Sorry, that was the BBC Micro. That was the computer. It was the actual keyboard that.
See, how would you? Would you sit on your lap then? Is that how you'd use it?
No, because it feels like I'm talking about a hoop and a stick. No, what?
I mean, you are.
I forget that you're actually significantly younger than me. It was the computer. So it was, you know, the BBC Micro, big old chunky thing with a keyboard on it, like a typewriter. And you wouldn't have it on your lap because it was too heavy. You'd have it on the table. You'd have if you were lucky, you'd get the color portable, but otherwise it was the black and white portable. And you'd have that off to just one side. And you would use your fingers on letters. So you'd have these two fingers here would be the Z and the X. These here would be the up and down, and the space bar was the fire. If you were, I didn't like playing with joysticks on home computers. That didn't.
Why not?
Keyboard all the time. Unless it's a Spectrum, then you're going to need a Kempston. But it was.
I used to love the joysticks because we had an Atari ST, and I remember with the joysticks. What was funny about them is that if you got two into the game, thing would move if you were pressing up.
Oh, so
then you got, I think it was a zip stick, it was called, with the suckers on the bottom.
Oh, yeah, I used to have the joystick with suckers,
lick them and stick them down onto the table. And
when you were kids, you would lick anything, wouldn't you? Imagine that, dirty suckers on the bottom of a joystick, sticking that on.
Yeah, I think it was Trick or Treating that ruined that, because that's when nasty things being given to kids, that was where all the rumours started. And
rumours, razor blades in apples and LSD imagine LSD in Swiss. What's your favourite control system?
I would have to say my favourite is the GameCube controller.
Oh, yeah, that's
because
a good
it's
one.
It's so stupid and lovely, and that big old A button makes me smile every time I see it. It makes no sense. The little C stick compared to the main control stick, and those springy triggers for monkey bowling is doesn't get much better than that.
It monkey bowling. Is it monkey bowling or super monkey ball?
Well, it's super monkey ball, but the mode is monkey
bowling.
There
was monkey bowling.
And you could add spin on on those triggers. It's amazing.
Another one more final control. The original Atari joystick is so satisfying.
Black one with the red button.
One with the red button, it feels great in the hand. It's a really stiff stick, and pressing that button, that's satisfying. That takes me back to being 8 years old. I'm in someone's living room doing that. You know, it's very. I'm ADHD, and one of the things that we quite often have associated a lot of feeling with touch. Touch can bring up so many memories. So if I'm holding an old Atari joystick. It's time travel. I'm back in my mate's living room playing.
Funny. I get that with smells.
Okay.
So, if it's a cold day and I have a smell, a hint of cigarette, like someone's smoking outside a shop or something, yeah, as I'm passing, I'm back at my football ground for the team that I support when I first started going, and I'm like back there again.
Yeah.
I can really feel it. Yeah, it's mad that it's crazy how the mind works with that stuff. But seeing as we're talking about the BBC Micro right now,
yes,
let's get to your game. Because for starters, when you first sent it to me, I was Googling it and couldn't find it because you called it Sum.
Oh, did I? Well, that's not going to help. It's not its name. But even with its name, it's still quite hard to find anything about it.
It really is. Yeah. Even if you search Sim, the game is called Sim.
Yeah.
And if you search Sim BBC Micro, most of the results are Sim City BBC Micro.
Yeah, which I didn't know existed. I bet it's terrible on the BBC, Sim City.
Yeah,
that's
I can't
awful.
Imagine that being a thing. But
it's
so
weird.
Why did you choose this?
I don't think anybody remembers this game. Before this evening, I've been doing a little bit of research into this, and I played it a few times. And I went on a BBC, I'm on a BBC Micro Facebook page, and I put, has anyone ever filmed a walkthrough of this? And some people knew it. A couple of people went, I've never heard of this. It's, I think it's 1984. It's written by a guy called, Joshua Portway. More on him in a moment. And the basic premise is you're this like dude. He's got a name and all of that backstory, but sort of in like a jetpack. I think it was around, I think it was just after NASA started building jetpacks for spacemen. And I think it's modeled on that. And you've got a jetpack and you have to fly around this maze and this kind of area. There's tunnels and there's a maze and there's sky and there's all this stuff. And you have to go and collect these, I think they're called Simeril crystals. Sim.
That's right. Yeah.
And it is nuts. The first thing that strikes you, it has got the most insanely addictive earworm that plays all and all around on a loop.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dun 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 dun. Go, and it's so good. I time traveled listening to it today, and it's really, really hard. It's really hard, and it's weird. There's a weird bit where it's got the Channel 4. There's a room with the Channel 4 logos.
I was gonna say I watched a video
of this,
and there's Channel 4 logos bouncing about. What's that about?
So it's 1984. I think
it's
not actually
Channel 4 logo, is it? It's just something that looks like it.
No, it is, because I think that was quite possibly the year or shortly after when Channel 4. Started. I'm old enough to remember when we had three channels. I remember two, but I remember three. I remember when TV would stop at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a couple of hours. Imagine that. BBC would stop.
Yeah.
And Channel 4 was this big, big thing. And we used to watch the test signal because it would say coming soon, Channel 4. And then every now and then they'd show a trailer of like Countdown and Brookside and stuff. And it was exciting. So I think it is the Channel 4 logo.
I have actually got the character's name in front of me, and I mean, we've got to let people know what this character's
It's not like Engelbert de Filmerdom or something, isn't it? It's something wild.
Hercules K. Orangebottom.
Oh, God, we're so dumb. He's been sent by Her Majesty's government as well, I think, is the premise, because they've run out of energy or something.
Yeah, it's Her Majesty's government. Yeah, this is interesting. I've never seen it before. It looks like it controls terribly. And, and the setup for it is look, you've got to find these things. There's 10 of them scattered around 70 screens.
Yeah.
And you've got to return them to the temple.
I never got more than four. Actually, it controls really, really well. That if you're doing the ZX left and right, you've got to redefine the keys. ZX left and right. It controls really, really well. It's one of those ones where the clash detection thing, it's a little bit mean. So you've got to be a bit careful. It controls really well. Apparently, I didn't know this. There's a bug in it, which means it's impossible to complete. So you can't
really?
Finish. Yeah. There's a bug.
Oh, imagine being the first person that found that. You'd be gutted, wouldn't you?
The old days
and then
were wild.
To store the next ad, so I'll tell everyone that you completed it.
Yeah, I finished it. It was great. Well, here's the interesting thing. If you, I think there was a later version or a patch or something. Maybe there was a different version, maybe for the BBC Master or something. If you did win, Joshua Portway, the ending was very disappointing. It was a screen that said, well done, you've completed it. Here's Joshua's phone number. Why don't you call him up and let him know how you got on? And it was his phone number. And you could phone him up. But I don't think anyone did because no one... It was...
The problem is you've got me in the mode of now questioning everything, whether you're lying again. That's the problem.
Me? Why would one of the greatest things that ever this I found this really inspiring in my art, which is why I like to sometimes give out my phone numbers and things. Frank Sidebottom, who I was a big fan of, he released an EP. I got it for Christmas, and one of the songs was called Timperley 9691909. That was Chris Seavey's home phone number. And you'd phone up, and he would have like an answer phone with messages, and you'd leave messages, and sometimes, just sometimes, Frank Sidebottom would answer the phone and talk to you. Didn't do it. Didn't. I never got that. But I think it was a thing in the 80s to put your phone number in. Games, records, toilet walls, those kind of
So, I get the toilet wall thing. I don't. So out of all the games that you could have picked, why Sim? I don't.
When you asked me to come on, right, and I thought, well, I'm not going to do what a lot of people do. I'm not going to pick something obscure that no one's ever heard of. Because that's the obvious thing to do. And I was going to go with Pac-Man, because I do think Pac-Man is the greatest video game of all time. One stick, if we go to an arcade with my boys, I can get to like screen 4 on Pac-Man. They think I'm a god. They think, you know, the ones where you can go and you can win like tokens now. It's all tokens.
Right. The massive ones.
Like, yeah, yeah.
They're huge, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do they play just as well as the original then?
Well, the one in the arcade in Milton Keynes, it's sticky when you turn right, so you've got to anticipate the right a bit. But I'm regularly winning 500 tokens on there. I'm a god. So I was going to do that. But then I just started thinking through, and this popped up in my mind. I hadn't thought of it for years. I remembered the song. I remember it looking beautiful. Of course, it doesn't look quite as good as I remember, but I still think it's pretty good looking. And I just remember I had so much fun on it, and I never hear it spoken about. Everyone talks about Elite, and everyone talks about maybe Citadel and all of these things on the BBC. No one talks about this game. And I don't know if it sold very well, but I don't think many people know about it. And it was a joy to, when I was thinking of the few, this is the one that may be the happiest. And I went and played it, and there was a lot of, there was a lot of me going, oh, fuck. Because it is so difficult, but it's one of those games that I used to sit there for hours and hours playing it, and it was a joy to play it again.
I would love to know if we could get in touch with who was it?
Well, Joshua Portway.
I'm looking at Joshua Portway because I'm looking at the credits here.
Yeah,
and Saskia Portway did the music.
Now here's the thing. So I knew I was doing this tonight, and I did some digging, and I mentioned it, and then I looked up Joshua Portway. I think this is the only game he made, and then he went on, I think, to be a musician. And it said, and I tried to find him on Twitter. He wasn't there. And it said, Joshua Portway worked a lot with this, and I can't remember with Lise Autogina. I hope I've got that right. It mentions it worked with her. And I found her on Twitter. So I messaged her and I said, look, I hope this doesn't sound weird. I'm sorry to jump on your timeline. I've been playing this game a lot and I think your friend Joshua made it. And I just want to pass on to him how much pleasure it brought me. She replied, how amazing. She spoke to him. How amazing. Josh says not to play the Electron version. It's impossible due to being forced to release in a hurry. Also, his sister wrote the music. Also, he is scared you may undermine your childhood if you're forced to confront the disillusionment of punctured nostalgia. Confronting the disillusionment of punctured nostalgia. And then she wrote, also, he'd love to talk ADHD sometime. Here's his email. So I haven't written to him yet, but I'm going to write
to him. That was a roller coaster ride of a message.
What a beautiful sentence. Forced to confront the disillusionment of punctured nostalgia. I love that.
Claustrophobic during that as it was coming in.
So I will send him an email and I will point him in the direction of your podcast, David. And
thank you. And I might have him on. I think I should have him on.
Maybe you should have him on.
That'd be a cracking episode. Okay. I have got a couple of quick fire questions for you.
Okay, let's do it.
You can ask
me anything you want to ask me.
Yeah, but I'd rather people not hear the sort of questions that I want to ask you. That's the problem. I'm more embarrassed about the questions I want to ask than the answers. Sega or Nintendo?
Sega.
Really?
Oh, totally. Totally.
These aren't quick fire questions at all. They're just short ones followed up by why.
I just think that I'm a big Dreamcast. I think the consoles, up until Sega gave up. Well, Sega was completely bullied by PlayStation 2, right? I think it was PlayStation 2, wasn't it?
It was PlayStation 1 when the Saturn came out.
Well, the Saturn was not very good.
It got really bad.
But the Dreamcast is a great console. But Sony kept going, PlayStation 2's coming out. It's got an emotion chip. We got a game called Bouncer, right? Didn't have an emotion chip, and Bouncer was crap. And it killed the Dreamcast. So Sega, out of those.
You're wrong. But what's your favorite? What's your favorite thing to have a video game on? If you could have a video game on a thing, would it be cartridge, floppy disk?
Cassette.
Would it be a tape? What would it be?
Well, do you know what? If I'm being nostalgic, it's a cassette. But actually, I've got this beautiful little thing. It's called a GoTek, and it's a flash drive, and it plugs into my BBC Micro, and I just turn a switch, press a button, I'm playing Repton within seconds.
It sounds like when you say turn a switch, it sounds like you need to wind it up a little bit, get it going. Is there a game that you like a modern take on? Is there an old favourite that you think, actually, I would like? So, for example, I don't know if you ever played Pac-Man Championship Edition on the 360.
I did have a go on it. No, I played the one on the Switch. What was that? Pac-Man 69 or something?
Oh, that's Pac-Man 99.
Pac-Man 99.
If you've got a 360, then definitely give Championship Edition a go, because that is a beautifully modern take on Pac-Man. It's so good.
Can I tell you,
very different.
One of the treasures, I got rid of all my gaming stuff years ago and then been buying them out. One of the treasures I had. So I was lucky enough to go to Japan and meet Toru Iwatani, the guy that created Pac-Man. Very strange gentleman, sweating a lot. And we had 12 people watching while I interviewed him, just to make sure he told the story about it being a pizza, which I don't believe. To get that interview, me and the production team, with me and James Webben and Simon, we had to go and sit in a meeting, about 20 people. We had one translator, our translator, and about 20 people. And at the end of the table was the actual head of Namco, the boss of Namco. We had to do all the bowing.
Oh, quite the boss. Sorry, I thought just the head.
And he just wanted to hear the questions. And And Toru Iwatani signed a copy of whatever that crap 3D Pac-Man game was that was out in the early 2000s, some crap thing. And it was signed by him. And I have no idea where that went. And I just think, man.
Yeah, I remember, because that was, you met him for Thumb Candy?
Thumb Candy, yeah, that was what that was.
We watched that together a couple of years ago now. Yeah. And the one moment that really stuck out to me that made me feel like I've been punched in the gut
James?
Was Shigeru Miyamoto drawing a personalized picture of Mario on a whiteboard instead of a bit of paper that you could have pocketed.
He was doing our cameraman as Mario, so it's Mario holding the camera. And you know, I felt so blessed that I did that. I wish I'd treated him with more respect, and I just wish I'd given him a bit of paper and said, going in there, that was a tough one to organize. And we're sat in this really cold clinical room. And then suddenly this, it's like Paul McCartney walking into a room.
That at the time? Cause I know he's like obviously massive now, but, yeah. But back then he was as. That was Shigeru Miyamoto.
Obviously it would be harder to get access to him now. We were so lucky we got it. Yeah. But he came in and it's sometimes you're sat in a room and someone with great presence walks in and you're not even looking at the door, but you know someone has come in. That was him. Just this personality. He's, you know, really beautiful to look at, very well dressed, very big smiley face and charming. Like really sincere charm. It was like McCartney or someone like that walking into it. It was wonderful. Wonderful.
I love that man. I really do. Every time you see him on anything, I just smile. I just grin from ear to ear.
Childlike quality that he's always maintained, I think. And I think that's infectious to big kids like us.
But... yes. Is there a game series that you'd like to see a modern take on?
Oh, sorry, that was a question in there. I think Defender is grossly, I think Defender is forgotten, right? And I would like something kind of Defender based where it takes a second person to push a hyperspace button where you're kind of doing most of the controls, but there's one button that you can't reach and you've got someone waiting for you to go now. Are you too slow? So kind of a new Defender that has one button for the second person to press.
Now, this isn't what you're describing, but have you heard of a game called, I think it's called Space Team for the phone?
For the phone?
For your phone.
No, I've not heard of Space Team, though. No.
There's this amazing game called Space Team, and we should really play it at some point, where you can get like four or five people in a room, each with a mobile phone.
Oh.
And the idea is that you're controlling a spaceship.
Yeah.
But you'll have some controls in front of you, and then you'll have a panel that says, turn the Z toggle up to 8. And then you go, well, you haven't got a Z toggle. Who's got the Z toggle? Turn it up to 8.
And they've got to
do it. But while that's happening, and by like 2 minutes in, you're just all screaming at each other.
Because, I like that.
You know, your task hasn't been done. We should play
I like that. That reminds me of that game. I think you can play, it's best on VR where someone's diffusing a bomb and you've got the instruction booklet.
VR. What is it called? Quick or We All Die or something like that.
It gets to, I play it with my kids and then it gets to a point where it's just, the puzzles are just too difficult and I'm out. You're in a room with a briefcase and there's a bomb. Right. Okay. There's a green wire. There's a yellow wire. There's the number 7 and an upside down 3. Okay. Right. Let me just look at that. Oh, I love it.
Brilliant YouTube video of real bomb disposal, people playing it. And honestly, it takes them about 10 seconds. It's so
that, really.
Yeah,
I'm writing that down.
They blitz through it. It's so funny.
Like, oh, that's great.
Each instruction is just so well thought out. It's great. Brilliant. That's worth watching. Okay,
how are these quick fire questions going?
Quick fire question for you. I need a new name for them. If you could be a character, like if you could have appeared as a character in any video game, what would it be?
I'd have been John Stryker in Stryker's Run. It's another BBC game you won't know that actually looks similar to Sim. And he's this soldier dude, right? And he's got, you're just running a straight line. Again, I never got anywhere near. I saw a map of it. Got nowhere near. You're running a straight line and you can chuck grenades. You can fire guns. Sometimes you can fly if there's a helicopter there and it's got fuel in, or you can have that. So
you could get in the helicopter and fly that.
Yeah. You could. I just thought he was the coolest dude. There was a second game, Strikers Run 2, codenamed Droid, which I also like, but I would be John Stryker, Strikers Run. Either that or Hen House Harry. You know Hen House Harry?
I do know Hen House Harry, yeah. Why do I know Hen House Harry?
He's the Chucky Egg dude.
Oh, of course. Chucky Egg was a strange game, wasn't it?
Have you played it recently?
I haven't. No,
dude,
no.
It's great. It's still.
Is it still decent? Great.
If we've been to a few retro events, my kids, if they see Chucky Egg, that's it. They're in. Chucky Egg is still a really, really good game. Yeah.
That's pretty cool because I mean I haven't connected with my kids with older games yet. You know, they're all Harry's just starting to get into Fortnite, which you know, got no choice about that. And Charlie is he plays a lot of Mario games, but I've not had a situation where I can say, oh, look at like Banjo-Kazooie or the games right. that I played when I was a kid. That
you
I
mean new, recent games? I think is what you're talking about there when you mentioned Banjo-Kazooie. Banjo-Kazooie. How long ago was that? It's like 5 years, right?
Well, no, that's fair enough. But I'm trying to think.
It's probably about 25 years, Banjo-Kazooie, I suppose.
Bomb Jack. And what was it, Double Dragon I played with my dad. Was one of the only games that I played with my dad. They look at them and they just go, no. So have I got a chance later on?
No, they won't.
Try that again.
They won't give a toss.
No.
They don't give a toss. You know, my kids, there are a few old games. Donkey Kong, my eldest loves Donkey Kong. My youngest is really dug Centipede when he played it. Choo Choo Rocket on the Dreamcast, if we've got that up, we'll have a few games of Choo Choo Rocket. But then it's back to Fortnite. That's all Valorant.
Right. So I took Harry to EGX once and I was like, they have a whole like retro section.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, we are going to play retro games, no interest. Yeah. I sat for 45 minutes watching him in an expo with brand new games that weren't out. And retro games.
Yeah.
And he was playing Minecraft in the bit. And I'm like, we've got this. Can you not? But I'm trying not to be.
On
that
your
person.
Recommendation, we watched this year 8-Bit Christmas, the movie about a guy.
I love that film.
And my kids watched it. They didn't. They clearly didn't like it. They were watching it because
really?
They could see that I was crying. And I, you know, it was obviously meant a lot to me. And they were clearly bored by it and doing it out of a duty to me. So.
Yeah. Oh, they're slightly older, aren't they? Because my kids loved it because there's a lot of slapstick and puke jokes and stuff in there. But that film,
it's a great film. I loved it. I Sons and Dads, 1980s. Oh, I'm in pieces from the very, very start.
Yeah, that end absolutely destroyed them.
Yeah.
Ian, thank you so much for coming on Random Access Memories. I could sit here for another hour just.
I hope that was okay. I get, I've enjoyed the run so far, and you've had such good guests on. You had Count Bimface on. What's that about?
That was nuts. I mean, you know, sometimes when you have people on this show, you have a little chat before you hit record, and there was no straight in with that one.
I like that. So, to be on with that, and there's been a few other people. There was the Fast Knife Freddy thing, whatever that was. There was Minder. I've really enjoyed listening to it. So thank you for asking me to come on. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for coming on. We do have to give a big shout out to our exec producers.
Okay.
So that's Mark Gidley. Tim Nichols and Andy Goss. And why not shout out producers as well? Harsh Singh, Sam Hughes, Craig Hannan, and Martin Warren.
There we go.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. It's great to see you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
That's the rehearsal done. Should we do it for real now?
You know what? I believe you as well. I believe you. CBFL.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack.
for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.